everybody across the land. Here's a special from Sequel Cast, though I don't know what it's gonna be about. Maybe Woody Allen, maybe Spike Lee, maybe Technicolor, maybe 3D, or maybe you just gotta wait and see. 'Cause you're gonna find out after this theme. This Sequel Cast special is a go. This Sequel Cast special is a go. What's it gonna be about? What's it gonna be about? What's it gonna be about? Who knows?
Hello and welcome to the Sequel Cast special. We're a podcast to talk about whatever the hell we please whenever we want to. It's sort of irregular. I don't mean for the show to always be about actors that have died, but it's been, you know, last time I think it was Robin Williams. This time around, it's Leonard Nimoy, who sadly is no longer with us. Passed away February 27th, 2015, in California at age 83. He's best known as playing Mr. Spock, but not only that, he was an author, a poet, a photographer, a director.
He was a lot of really amazing things.
Definitely, and Star Trek was just one of those. But we're in this brief sort of special podcast, we're just going to talk about, you know, some of our first experiences watching Leonard Nimoy on screen, and some of our favorites of the work he's done. So, Jason, when did you first became aware of Leonard Nimoy?
I guess as a kid, it must have been the Star Trek movies.
Yeah. Which one was the first one you saw? Was it Voyage Home?
I think it was actually him diving into a tank with whales. I think made an impression on me as a kid, but I really didn't know enough about Star Trek to really understand the impact that Leonard Nimoy had made in sci-fi on that show.
Yeah, I know. My dad, you know, was pretty young when Star Trek originally aired on TV, but in college he would watch the repeats constantly. And the first movie I saw Leonard Nimoy in would have been Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. And I just found the character of Spock so mesmerizing. I don't know, like that he was smart, but he wasn't like a typical nerd as you might have seen in a film of the 80s where it was, you know, like a bad Jerry Lewis impersonation or something. He had an air of gravitas about him. Thrasher.
Yeah, I come from my connection to Nimoy comes from two places. First and foremost, it was Star Trek. I started watching reruns of Star Trek, I think, when I was 4 or 5.
Wow.
And when I got to the age where I kind of fully understood that these were actors playing parts, I started seeing Leonard Nimoy in everything. Get Smart, Bonanza, the classic Commando Cody sci-fi serial Zombies of the Stratosphere. But then the other thing that that really made me truly love Nimoy as an artist and personality was when he hosted In Search Of. Back in the early 90s, they used to rerun that on the afternoons, Friday afternoons on A&E, and I just gobbled that show up, and his voice was just the perfect voice to discuss the unusual, the supernatural, the outre. It's really like that. That's where I really learned to respect Leonard Nimoy.
He really did a lot of narration. I think more recently he did like narration in the computer game Civilization IV.
And he was also in two of the Kingdom Hearts as well, I believe.
Yeah, as the bad guy Master Xenohort. And he sounds really gravelly and craggy, and I don't know if that was a decision as much as Leonard Nimoy's voice at, given his age.
I think it was his voice, although as I understand it, it wasn't so much his age. Leonard Nimoy did smoke, He smoked quite a bit. Now, he quit. I think he quit in like the 70s or 80s, but the damage was done. If you listen to most of his voice work over the past decade, you really can hear what the smoking did to his lungs. And in fact, I believe before he passed, he had been diagnosed with some form of lung cancer. I don't know if either of you can confirm that.
I don't know about cancer. I know he was diagnosed with COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease.
Oh, that's what I was thinking of, yes.
Yeah. So that is what killed him.
Right. And several, you know, decades after he quit smoking, so that stuff certainly, I don't mean to be preachy here, but that stuff certainly does damage to you. You know, I also think of Leonard Nimoy voicing Galvatron in the animated Transformers movie.
That actually has one of my favorite, and I'm not being hyperbolic, him as Galvatron in that movie has one of my all-time favorite lines in all of film.
What is that?
Okay, so it's when Galvatron, when Starscream is anointing himself leader of the Decepticons, and Galvatron comes in, and Starscream goes, "You're interrupting my coronation!" And he just says, with perfect seriousness, "Coronation? This is bad comedy."
And then he off Starscream at that moment.
Fucking murders him. Murders that him. Line, and his reading of that line is so perfect. It's almost Shakespearean.
You know, at the time in the theater when I saw the latest Star Trek movie, Star Trek Into Darkness, I thought the cameo of Leonard Nimoy as old Spock, Spock Prime, as he's listed in the credits, was not needed. And I still think it's ultimately not needed, but in retrospect, it's nice to see him as Spock one last time.
Yeah, I agree. It's completely gratuitous and fan-servicey, but damn it, he will always be Spock, and it's so nice to see him ride out one more time.
And he did do that commercial with Zachary Quinto.
Oh, that's great. That's a car commercial. Were they both... I think of Spock, I think of a moment from a film that's not very good, Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, where he gives the Vulcan nerve pinch to a horse. It's almost a Blazing Saddles moment, but it's...
No, that's a William Shatner moment. You can tell the difference between the way Nimoy directs and Shatner directs just by looking at that Voyage Home versus Final Frontier.
Well, yeah, I mean, aside from... Let's talk about his career as a director briefly. You know, aside from directing some TV and so forth, he also directed feature films. He directed the top-grossing domestically film of 1987, Three Men and a Baby.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, and... sadly, after that, he did a very controversial movie starring Liam Neeson called The Good Mother. That was a huge flop. And then he did some kind of like smaller movies after that, like Funny About Love and Holy Matrimony. But it goes to show you, if you have a movie that gets a lot of bad press, and it can put you on the so-called blacklist. But before that, you know, he directed back-to-back what some people call or some of the greatest Star Trek films. Star Trek III: Search for Spock, which I think is less of a film and more of a resolution of Star Trek II, and Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home, which is possibly the most accessible Star Trek
movie. I would say that's the best of all Star Trek films.
Voyage Home?
Yep. I'm going to throw down on that. I believe that's a sentiment that I also stated when we covered that movie, but it is my favorite of all Star Trek films, and I think it is overall the best.
If you ask someone, have you seen a Star Trek movie, and they're above a certain age, and they say yes, and you can almost be guaranteed it's the one with the whales. This one they seem to put on TV the most.
True.
But there's a funny story that Walter Koenig says of himself as Chekhov in Star Trek IV. He really didn't want to say nuclear vessels, but Nimoy made him say that as it was part of the script and directed him exactly on how to pronounce it.
And they actually, they go back to that in the episode of Futurama where they go to the planet where all the Star Trek cast members are living after being reheaded. Would that be the correct word?
Rebodied.
Rebodied, because they were just heads. And they talk about directing each other and the respect that they gave each other. He got a great performance out of William Shatner because he respected him as an actor. William Shatner got a great performance out of William Shatner because he respected him as an actor. Love that.
Well, it's something that I think I love. For all the varied work that Nimoy did, every time he appeared on a Matt Groening show, and it was always as himself.
He was in the pilot of Futurama, wasn't he?
Yes, as himself, as his own head. Yeah. It was a life of quiet dignity.
He's also in the monorail episode.
Oh my, who could forget?
Best, episodes of Simpsons.
Conan O'Brien. The best episode ever made. I watched that the day he died, actually. That was part of my process.
The day he died, when the news came, I wasn't shocked because there was a news story that he had been rushed for the hospital for an emergency. And given his age and stuff, I thought maybe his time had come. But I did watch a clip of an original series episode where it's some action scenario and Spock has to take care of the bad guy so the crew can walk past him. And Spock walks up to the bad guy and says something along the lines of, "Oh, look, a space spider." And the guy looks to the side and Spock gives the Vulcan nerve pinch and knocks him out.
It's such a
dry delivery.
Oh, well, that's one of the things, because of his gravitas voice. I mean, he can say normal things and make them sound hilarious and believable at the same time.
What about, there's a bit of the controversy about, because Leonard Nimoy is Jewish, he had to be buried really quickly. They had to have a really quick funeral.
Yeah, because of certain traditions, they don't. You don't use all the weird preservation stuff. You don't use all the formaldehyde to preserve the body. You have a very quick burial, but then you have a long wake. Shatner wrote a book about sitting Shiva.
That's right. Shatner's part Jewish, too.
After his wife died, he wrote this book. He sat Shiva for a long time. I'm going to bring up a story. Well, I'm not going to bring up a story about Shatner. But Nimoy also was very tied to his Jewish heritage. He was born from Ukrainian Jewish immigrant parents in Boston.
Well, I wanted to get into that a little bit about Shatner and that, you know, the tabloids tried to make it a story that Shatner couldn't make it to Leonard Nimoy's funeral and he should be ashamed. But in William Shatner's defense, he had a charity event. He had all lined up. And he had promised he was going to be there. They'd raised all this money and the expectation that he would be there. And because they had to do the funeral so quickly, William Shatner could not make it in time. And people just gave him all sorts of shit for that.
But Shatner's wife and daughter were there to pay their respects.
That's right, which is very important, and people don't mention that.
Well, I feel like that reaction is more about shitting on William Shatner and not about, you know, Leonard Nimoy. Although,
right.
I don't know if you heard this, and I'm not gonna state this as gospel because I have had a hard time finding primary sources about this. But I kind of hope it's true that apparently, because everyone expected the Nimoy funeral to get a lot of publicity because he was so beloved just across the board, the Westboro Baptist Church was going to picket the funeral. But because he was Jewish, it was going to be a traditional Jewish burial, and happened so quickly, they couldn't get organized in time to show up.
No, that's true. That was a real that was a news story that came out there.
They're also terrible, terrible people.
Yeah,
and they can go straight to hell.
But I mean, it was also a very personal funeral. It was not a big publicized affair. Just really close friends and family.
Though there were a lot of people there, Chris Pine, Zoe Saldana, J.J. Abrams was there, of course.
Not to mention, you know, with J.J. Abrams, Leonard Nimoy also did work on Fringe as a character for a few episodes.
Very true. What was it, Dr. Bell?
Yes, something like that.
Yeah, Dr. William Bell. But I didn't. Can anybody give me a rundown of what Star Trek people were there. We know who wasn't, of course. Some of the other members of the cast who have passed away.
I don't, unfortunately.
Because Walter Koenig had to have been there.
I would think so, yeah. I did see a recent late appearance by Leonard Nimoy in the documentary To Be Takei about George Takei.
Nice.
And it's a wonderful clip of Leonard Nimoy kind of laughing when being presented with the fact that George Takei is developing a musical based on his time as a child in an internment camp in the U.S. But he did produce that as a musical in the greater L.A. area, and it to great success. But I don't know if they took it to Off-Broadway yet. But anyway, To Be Takei is an interesting documentary about George Takei, Captain Sulu himself. But yeah, Leonard Nimoy, I think of what an amazing career. I mean, one of his more offbeat parts was as the narrator in the video game Seaman for the Dreamcast.
I have no idea what that is.
It's about a part fish, part man in an aquarium, and it's kind of like a simulation game where you feed him, and Leonard Nimoy narrates it.
I remember that. It looked like a bass with a human face.
Yes.
Oh,
and the
God.
Graphics were, like, really bad, but it was a very experimental, weird game at a time. I think it used some sort of microphone peripheral where you could speak to it and tell it to do things. People think of him as Spock in Star Trek. There were two computer games, Star Trek, I think, 25th Anniversary, and Star Trek Judgment Rights, where they were like point-and-click adventure games where all the original Star Trek crew reprised their role.
That is pretty cool.
But the graphics are like real blocky pixels, but it was supposed to have the tone of the original series. And everyone reprised their roles, and you kind of controlled the whole crew, and different people could solve puzzles in different ways and so forth.
Oh, you know what? What Leonard Nimoy is really good in Shelley Duvall's Fairy Tale Theater, he plays the evil magician in their version of Aladdin and the Lamp.
That was directed by Tim Burton, was it not?
It may have been. I mean, it's very dark. Oh. It's very atmospheric. And what's kind of fascinating is that he's under so much makeup with these bushy eyebrows and this long mustache and this huge turban. It's hard to tell he's Leonard Nimoy until you hear his voice.
This was directed by by Tim Burton. It came out in 1986. Yep.
And it's just his voice is so good. It makes me wish he played more villains.
Oh, do you remember? You guys remember the movie The Pagemaster?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Somebody just reminded me that it was in Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Of course, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Oh God, I still remember that voice of him changing. Oh.
I remember him as the voice on a kind of animated miniseries that was on Fox called Invasion America.
Actually, that was on the early WB.
Oh, WB. He played General Conrad, but that was a prime time animated sci-fi show, which is pretty unusual for the time.
Well, that was actually meant to be that season had a fascinating production history. It was actually that season was meant to be the first part of a 3-season arc.
Ah.
It had all been planned out. It was going to be a 3-season show, but the network just kind of got... It didn't perform the way the network hoped. There was no merchandising tie-in, and it just didn't become... It didn't become the animated sci-fi epic that everyone involved was hoping for.
Wasn't Steven Spielberg a producer on that?
Yes, he was a producer, and I think it was also based on a concept he had. I think.
Got it. Yeah.
Like he kind of put down the idea, and the writers ran with it.
He also did the voice in a Disney animated feature, Atlantis: The Lost Empire.
Oh, yes. He was great in that.
As the king. Oh, that's just a great movie in itself.
One thing I wish I would have seen him in, I don't know if this ever got a video release, it was a TV movie of the legendary novel Brave New World.
Was that a made-for-TV movie of it?
Yeah, made-for-TV movie based on the book by Huxley, and he played Mustafa Mond.
Ooh. I'd like to see anybody attempt to do Brave New World. That's a...
Stars Peter Gallagher in the lead. As Bernard and Marx, but I recall that book being pretty good stuff.
there's a lot of things that I would love to see Nimoy actually. I would love to see, I'd basically love to see anything he did in theater. It's amazing that that doesn't get really a lot of notice. I would have loved to have seen him handle Fahrenheit 451.
Right. Didn't he do, he wrote and directed and starred in a TV movie where he played Theo Van Gogh, and it was called Vincent.
What?
Well, that was based on a one-man show.
Oh, that's
show
right. It was filmed on his one-man play. Yeah, one-man show.
Yeah, there's even an episode of In Search Of about Vincent Van Gogh, because he just, he's sort of immersed in Vincent Van Gogh lore.
In fact, one of his first directing gigs was doing an episode of the T.J. Hooker.
Where he got another wonderful performance out of Bill Shatner.
Yeah, you know, there's if you check out the special edition DVDs and Blu-rays of the Star Trek movie, Leonard Nimoy does commentary on, that's my dog Starbuck crying, thank you Starbuck, does commentary for Star Trek 3 and 4. And he mentions a story in Star Trek 3 about getting the, what some people call William Shatner's greatest performance as Kirk, when he finds out his son has been killed by the Klingons, and he kind of trips over and falls into the chair. And at first it was a legitimate accident. I think William Shatner tripped walking backwards on the set into the chair, but he seemed to turn it into the moment. And then they kind of worked backwards from that to tie it
in. It was a wise choice to keep that in.
Yeah. It's pretty unusual to see a humble William Shatner, but you do in that scene.
Hey, again, editing and directing, you can do anything with film.
Yeah.
And actually, if we could talk about something a bit more serious, because one of the most striking things that Nimoy ever did that really struck me, in 2002, I went to in 2002, I went to New York as part of an off-campus program, and during part of this, I spent a day at the Holocaust Museum, and Leonard Nimoy. There was this room you passed through at the beginning at the time where there was this sort of kind of collection of clips and things of Jewish culture as it related to the Holocaust in that time period. And Leonard Nimoy did all the narration for it, and it was just the perfect voice to have for that.
They've recorded a lot of things with the New York Orthodox Center. I think it's called the Wexley Center. I'm trying to, let me pull this up real quick, guys. The Yiddish Book Center, Wexler Oral History Project. They sat down and got a lot of his Jewish history, some of the stories from his youth, what Jewish culture meant to him, as an oral history of his connection. And he spoke Yiddish. That's something you never really expected to see. Like, you never expected Spock to be saying Yiddish words. Do you want to give us some of those Yiddish words, William?
Kibitz.
There
that's one.
One.
Plots, that's another.
And as of recently,
why did we go dead?
No. Don't worry, we can edit that out.
That's all the Yiddish we know.
Taken out. Jason,
remember, be a mensch, not a schmendrick. Don't put me on the spot like that.
Shlomo Shlomazel hasn't felt incorporated.
You know more Yiddish than me. But one of the things that a lot of people have kind of said is like, oh, the Vulcans are Jews. They're space Jews.
Do you think
do you think
that theory makes sense, Jason?
Not really. But Leonard Nimoy has said that the Vulcan salute did come from something from his youth. Let me see if I can pull that up.
Oh yeah. There was he recalled that his rabbi would do this, and I've seen this before. That there's a hand gesture that goes along with the Jewish, a particular Jewish blessing, where your ring finger and middle finger are separated. And so what he did is he just took that, brought the thumb in, and then that becomes the Vulcan greeting. Because I think it was one of those things in the episode where he felt like if the Vulcans are meeting each other, they shouldn't just shake hands or bow. It should be something unusual, and so that's what he brought to it. Which, as I recall, is the same way the Vulcan nerve pinch came about. There was a script where Spock was supposed to waylay an alien guard, and he just felt that Spock would never just deck somebody. He should do something. He should do something sort of subtle and strange. And they came up with the idea that he would like touch a pressure point to make someone lose consciousness.
Right. I mean, that speaks volumes to the character. I recall a story of Zachary Quinto, who plays the new young Spock in the newer Star Trek films, is unable to do the Vulcan live long and prosper gesture. They have to use a tiny string to keep his fingers together. Cause
how hard is it?
I don't think it's that hard, but some people just can't do it. I don't know if it's flexibility or they can't, you know, put a few fingers together. But they have to use like fishing line or something to tie his fingers together, then they CG it out.
I like to imagine that they have some ridiculously expensive $50,000 CGI process they have to do to make his hands gesture.
I think one of the more recent performances Leonard Nimoy did as Spock is he did some narration for the cinematic segments in the massively multiplayer online role-playing game Star Trek Online.
Oh, really?
Which isn't a great game, but it still exists. It's like most of them are nowadays free to play, so you might as well download that and try it out just to see the intro or look on YouTube for the intro cinematic that talks about where in the Star Trek universe the game takes place.
I just remembered a movie that I totally forgot that it was in, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the 1970s version.
Oh yeah.
Oh God, he's creepy in that. I think he outcreeps Jeff Goldblum in that movie.
It's really something. I mean, gee, but I keep on forgetting how long Leonard Nimoy acted in things on television, like even starting in the early 50s.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You can't
disagree with that.
Hey, guys, here's some fascinating lore that I just uncovered. And you know I love 80s music and new wave music. Leonard Nimoy is in the music video for the Bangles single Going Down to Liverpool.
I watched that this morning.
Yeah, he plays the chauffeur for their limo.
He features prominently in the music video. You don't see him dancing. But, I mean, speaking of music, Leonard Nimoy came out with a few albums.
Indeed.
And who can forget the Ballad of Bilbo Baggins?
I have an unironic love for that song.
Really?
It's not a terrible song. Yes, it is a novelty track. I will not deny it. But it's fun and it's playful. And like it feels like it's written and performed by someone who legitimately loves the source material.
It's worse when you read or when you watch the video with it.
Oh, the video is delightfully cheesy camp, especially like the fights. He battled the trolls and we see like corpses flying over a hill. But that just makes me like it even more.
I'm really surprised we did not see a rendition of that song over the end credits on one of the Hobbit movies.
Oh, jeez.
But it would be very, very like, you know, Centaurian. In the middle of the earth, in the land of the Shire,
lives a brave little hobbit who we all admire.
Ooh, I got one, and I wish I owned this on vinyl. I really wish I owned this I really wish I owned this album. Leonard Nimoy presents Mr. Spock's Music from Outer Space.
That's right. A lot of spoken word material in that. In some delightfully trippy material that reminds me a bit of what you hear on the third record on the Frank Sinatra album Trilogy, where the third... Have you heard that album?
No.
So Sinatra did an album called Trilogy, where one disc is the past, one is the present, one is the future. The present have covers, including his famous cover, New York, New York, right? That was originally done by Liza Minnelli. But the disc for the future is Frank Sinatra doing poetry about how humanity should be better to each other over like warbly space sounding instrumentals. And that kind of feel is what you get on Leonard Nimoy's, granted Leonard Nimoy stuff came first, but this
one. I got another one.
Yes.
1969, The Touch of Leonard Nimoy.
He did a few collections of poetry. He recently some of his photography.
There's a Newman song on there. Oh.
Recently some of his photography has kind of which wasn't terribly famous at the time, has come into mainstream. He did something, I forget what it was called, but it was a series of nude photographs with women of different body shapes. Just because he came to do a speech somewhere and one of his fans that was, let's say, more hefty said, you know, she never got to see artistic photos of women, of nude women of higher, you know, of that weighed more.
Who weren't heroin chic.
Yeah, right. They didn't get to see more. You didn't get to see a lot of nude Rubenesque photography these days, to use a fancy term. And so he did a sort of this picture of women of all different shapes and sizes, and that got toured in some galleries around the country, and also got a hardcover book that you've been seeing articles pop up all around Facebook about that, like it's something new, but it's nice people are rediscovering it.
I think the thing that I like the most about Nimoy is that he's very talented, you know. He stayed active right up until the end. That's kind of the life I want to live. I want to be able to do lots of interesting things and keep doing them until I die.
So I think we should wrap this up with a Star Trek related question. Do you think they planned on having old Spock back in Star Trek III? You know, the newest Star Trek film that's coming out.
Regrettably, yes, but that's simply because of J.J. Abrams' lack of confidence with the franchise.
Well, no, J.J. Like Abrams isn't going to direct the new
Star
Trek.
Oh, I know he's not, but he's still a producer and consultant on it.
Yep.
And what he says is going to go, and I feel like he would have shoehorned in a cameo for original Spock as fan service and as a little mild Deus Ex Machina. And on the one hand, while I think it would have been, if they did that, I'm sure it would have been a terrible move for the movie, I still would have loved every second of it because I would be watching Leonard Nimoy as Spock, not phoning it in.
Allegedly, they would have had old Spock and old Kirk in a scene together somehow. And did you know, one last bit of trivia, that William Shatner was supposed to have a small scene in the Star Trek reboot from 2009?
Yes.
Do you know that, Jason? What it was supposed
to
be?
I don't see how that would have helped.
So it would have been at the end. It would have been at the end, and Kirk is not, you know, convinced that him and Spock should be friends or still going to be or going to be friends in the future. And Spock plays a video message. Old Spock plays a video message to the new young Kirk. That's of old Captain Kirk recording a birthday message to Spock saying, you know, Mr. Spock, we're such good friends. Let me sing you a song. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, don't sing it. Those horrible old crones will send their demons after us.
It was something along those lines.
That sounds so dumb.
Right. And William Shatner refused because he said, if I'm going to be in another Star Trek movie, God damn it, you're going to give me a big, meaty part. And he's right. Like, you can't. Even though William Shatner doesn't do much. He's William fucking Shatner, and even though he acts circles around Patrick Stewart in Star Trek Generations, even though all he's doing is cooking scrambled eggs and riding horses.
Yeah.
That's the other thing about that scene. That had to have been a birthday message he recorded for Spock before he got sucked into the Nexus.
you're right. And would they have used CG to slim down his tum-tum?
Oh, hell no. Pure Shatner. But this isn't about Shatner, damn it. This is about Nimoy.
Well, in the spirit of...
Ways are inseparable. You know, it's hard to imagine one without the other.
Well, and that's one thing I'd highly recommend is get the special edition DVD or Blu-ray of Star Trek IV because the commentary is William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy together on the same track. So, I mean, let's wrap this up. Very sad to see Leonard Nimoy go, but what a rich life. He offered so much, whether you like poetry, whether you like photography, acting, directing, what have you. He did so much in his career.
Gee, I mean, you look at who's left of the original Star Trek, not to get too morbid, but of the original cast of the main crew, it's Nichelle Nichols, Uhura, you know, George Takei, Sulu, Chekhov, Walter Koenig as Chekhov, and Captain Kirk, but that's it of the main crew, right? That's still with us?
I believe so.
I got to see James Doohan briefly at the corner of my eye of Dragon Con one year. He was on a wheelchair. Jeez. So, I mean...
I have never seen a member of Star Trek. Oh, wait, no. I've seen Michelle Nichols at, I believe, Gen Con.
Yeah, we both saw Michelle Nichols at Gen Con. And a few years before at Gen Con, I had the honor of shaking Walter Koenig's hand.
Oh, you bastard.
He's great in Babylon 5.
Yes, he is.
Well, why don't we give a final recommendation? If someone is to watch one Leonard Nimoy thing that's not Star Trek, what should it be?
I'm going to recommend, if you can find it, these are for some reason hard to find, simply because it's well worth your time and it's become obscure. Watch an episode of In Search Of.
Hmm. He was the host of that, the narrator, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Jason, what about you?
I'm going to go back to my original thing. Go watch those episodes of Simpsons.
Good call. Gee, I would say there's so little that's non-Star Trek related that I'm familiar with that he did. But I would say...
Idiots. Idiots. Mission Impossible.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that's right. He joined that show later in the... Ironically, replacing Martin Landau's part. And Martin Landau was originally cast for Spock.
And then he went and did Space 1999.
Yeah. So he made a good decision there. If I was to recommend you watch Leonard Nimoy and something, just experience, why not? Spin up, this is an underappreciated film, Atlantis, The Lost Empire. It's a quirky Disney film. It's kind of like a little boy's first adventure with character designs by Mike Mignola of Hellboy fame. It's not the greatest thing in the world, but it's a Disney cartoon that tries to do something different, and Leonard Nimoy does a great performance as the Atlantean king, and it has a lot of environmentalism that it seems like Leonard Nimoy really fought for in his real life, too, not just in that character.
Well, you know, speaking of that kind of thing, the monorail episode of The Simpsons that Nimoy was on, George Takei was their first choice for that episode because he'd been on The Simpsons before, so they thought he would be really easy to get. And when they sent him the script, he sent a reply, which I assume was done like this. I'm actually on the board of several... I couldn't possibly do an episode mocking public transportation.
That's right.
So Nimoy was the runner-up, but he's so perfect.
Will, can you do that one more time? You cut out halfway through.
Oh, I certainly couldn't do an animated show mocking public transportation. I'm on the board of several public transportation committees.
Gee, so the world is a lesser place without Leonard Nimoy, but he had a rich career.
We got a wonderful body of work.
No,
to enjoy.
The body of work. There you go. That's a better way.
And a wonderful body.
He looked healthy. He was cut.
Yes, no, Captain Shade.
Nimoy,
you know,
a very attractive man.
Yeah, you never got to see Fat Spock, really.
You do it tons. Oh, good night, folks.
There are no overweight Vulcans, I think, that have ever been depicted on Star Trek.
Sequelcast Special is a Hipster Goblin production.